Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is an author, fan of the color orange, and an entrepreneur. He is best known as the founder of Content Marketing Institute and the largest in-person content marketing event in the world, Content Marketing World. He founded the company back in 2007 and spent 9 years growing and scaling the business until it was acquired in June of 2016. During this time, my guest also published 4 massively successful books on marketing with content. His 5th book, Killing Marketing, is set to launch September 2017. In this conversation, we discuss the true value of writing down your goals in the present tense, how CMI began monetizing its blog, and why now is the best time to start. Now, let's hack Joe Polizzi. I'm going to take a moment to thank today's sponsor for supporting the show, Brand 24. 80% of consumers do research or ask online before making a buying decision. Brand 24 gives you the listening tools to find these leads, identify where to promote products, and find customers before they find you. With social search, you can search the web for key topics, trends, or discussions. Brand 24 enables you to reach customers so you can react and engage quickly in real-time comments made about your brand. Imagine all the channels in one place. That's Brand 24. Plus, with their Apple and Android apps, you can track customers' trends and insights on the go, wherever you are. Find out why over 100,000 companies use Brand 24 to monitor the web every day. Whether you're a one-person business, startup, or Fortune 500 company, Brand 24 helps you discover your digital footprint worldwide. Start hacking your brand with a 14-day free trial at brand24.com/hack. Plus, as a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, of course, you get an exclusive bonus, don't you? Of course. That's the way it works. For being a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you're going to get an exclusive 50% off your first 3 months after your trial period is over. To check out your 14-day trial right now, get started at brand24.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest who I was just discussing how I cannot believe I have not had him on in 350 episodes. Joe, welcome to the show.
John, thanks for having me on. I don't know, should I take it personally that it's taken 950 or 350 guests?
If I was you, I would, but hopefully you won't.
I know. It is an honor, my friend. It's always, I do most marketing podcasts, so I love to talk about entrepreneurship and starting a business and all the challenges that go with that. So thanks for having me on.
Excellent. Let's jump straight into it, shall we?
Sure. Absolutely.
Joe, you are a man that wears many hats. Today we're talking to you, the entrepreneur. So Joe, as an entrepreneur, could you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Yeah, funny. You'd think that I would have to think about that for a while. It's actually a pretty easy answer. I started as an entrepreneur in 2007. And one of the habits that I picked up and sort of, a lot of people do it, but it created my own methodology is I wrote down all my goals and I put them into 6 different categories. So I would look at, okay, what are some goals that I want to accomplish? How can I put measurements to them around my family goals, my financial goals, my spiritual goals, my philanthropic goals, and my career goals. And every day I would get up and review those goals. And I really believe that if I did not do that, I wouldn't have been as successful on my entrepreneurial journey as that, because it got my mind right every day. And as you know, you can get into emails and you can get into doing projects that are not additive to the entrepreneurial journey and you get kind of caught up in all a bunch of nonsense. And if you really do review, this is what I want to accomplish. This is who I want to be. And actually, the way I wrote them was present tense. This is what I am worth, X amount of money. I have X successful businesses that I'm able to control at a distance and those things that I've written down. So that was probably the thing, John, that after reading some books like Think and Grow Rich from Napoleon Hill and Seven Habits and The 10X Rule by Grant Cardone, those are sort of the three books that I read and came up with this goal writing method, which is not new, but this is what I do. And that has probably made the most difference to me.
Wow. I love this. So 350 times this question's been answered. I've never heard this before.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I would imagine you're talking to entrepreneurs that just, of course, they just write down and review their goals on a regular basis. I travel a lot, as you know, and I have my notebook. It's a little Lego notebook now, because sometimes the pages get a little tattered, so I have to rewrite the goals. And I do go back and look at the goals every once in a while, say, hey, do I need to change them? Do I need to adapt them? I definitely have changed them in the past few months. So I always take them with me. So everywhere I go, travel around the world, I always take them and I need to review those to make sure I stay on point.
Interesting. And so you're right. It gets talked about a lot, as in we quote unquote know or think we should do this. But from my personal take on it, and then from talking to so many people, Joe, I find that it's fascinating that you said you started doing this when you started your business. I think most people, myself included, like financial goals, those kind of things, you put them off until you're more quote unquote successful. You know what I mean? And then that time never comes because you don't set those goals.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think the difference maybe with the way that I write them versus and some other people versus the majority of people out there, they say, I want to be a millionaire. Let's just say, for example, mm-hmm. Well, I'll read mine to you, which I actually have not reached yet. But my first financial goal, I have it right in front of me, is my net worth is over $100 million. I have not reached that goal, but I read that every day. And then I'm like, okay, well, what do I need to do? What do I need to do to get there? I got lots to do. The second goal is I own companies that I can control from a distance and have great people working with me. So, I mean, then by the way, I have 3 to 4 for each one. I have, you know, financial and then spiritual and family and those types of things. So, and I think it's the present tense nature of it, like it's happened, like it is happening now instead of being a wish. It's something that, oh, yes, absolutely. Get my mind right. What do I need to do?
Wow. And are they all that lofty? As in, my net worth is $100 million.
I don't know. So I've shared these before, so I'm willing to, I don't share all of them, but most of right. them I can share. So my number one family goal, my marriage is alive and healthy and a positive role model for others. So just, you know, it's not a little aspirational. I have healthy children who believe they can accomplish anything. That's my second family goal.
That's awesome.
So it's just that, so that affects how I react as a father. And my goal as a father right now is to teach my kids optimism. I've been all about this optimistic way to look at things. And I believe that if they are optimistic, they will be able to accomplish anything, no matter what negative things come their way. So, I mean, I don't know if that's lofty or not. They seem pretty simple to me because I read them all the time.
Right.
But they are what they are. But that's certainly helped. And I'll tell you what, there's been days where I've missed. And you know what I do? I get bogged down in email. I get bogged down in the minutiae of meaningless things. So
this kind of keeps you maybe to higher leverage sort of tasks and things that will perform a bigger sort of return on investment to you.
I don't want to get too high and mighty with this, but I will tell you that the majority of the people that I'm around and the majority of people that I talk to, and even a lot of my friends, they get concerned about things that mean nothing, that are so silly. And they make excuses for why they haven't been more successful, however they define success, which is interesting, right? Like I know somebody close to me that they don't feel like they've been a success. And I look at them and I said, well, it depends on how you define success. I could look at that and looks very successful to me from the outside, but you don't feel successful because you define success in a different way than I do. Fine. So I guess the first thing is how do you define success? And then what is it going to take to get there? But yeah, I see so many people just getting in relationships that they shouldn't be. They're doing work that is not strategic. It's very tactical. It's, or they're not doing work at all and they're on Facebook all the time or something like that, which just bothers the hell out of me. So yeah, I mean, it's just trying to think of, and I'm not perfect by any means, but I'm trying to look at how do I spend my day? How can I be productive? And what's the most important thing I should be doing right now because of these 15 goals that I have?
Right, exactly. And let's take it back if we can. You said this journey started, and when you set up these goals 10 years ago, when you started Content Marketing Institute, which was since acquired last year. So you've exited successfully, although you still work within the company for the rest of this year. But I just want to help the listener, because the listener is hearing six big goals that you did. And like having these high leverage things, having these like tactics and not the minutia sounds, I don't know why it sounds easier to some people when you're running a huge company. But when you literally were just starting, you started a website.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's hard to kind of think in those big ways and those leverageable sort of ways. So can you kind of take us back to how you sort of started the company?
I'm more than happy to. I think about it fondly because it almost broke me. So in 2005, I started to get the itch to want to start a company. I have many journals. I don't know if you know people like this, but I have all kinds of journals of every size and shape you can imagine with my notes. I take written notes and ideas and I write them all down and I have them stacked all over the place in my office. And all of it was revolved around my business ideas. I have this idea for business and I write it down and I write notes and then I think about it and ponder it and come back to it. Well, I'd be talking about this way too much. And my wife finally said, look, are you going to do something about this? Or are you just going to talk? Because I was working at a company called Pet Media at the time. I had an executive level position. Basically, it was content marketing. We would do outsourced content marketing projects for large B2B companies. And I was doing very, very well, but also had this, you know, this drive to start my own business. And my wife says, look, you know, either just be happy with what you're doing or just, you know, live the corporate life or go do this thing, this dream, this wish, this thought that you have about starting a business. I said, okay. We set a date together. And the date was, you know, the last day in March of 2007 that I would quit my job and move on. And that was my last day. Basically, I put my notice in the middle of February in 2007 and started. So I was making well over six figures at the time, had benefits, two small children, three and five, and left and had nothing. Like literally just stopped and had no income coming in. And I'm like, what? I mean, literally my family members looked at me like I had two heads. Like, are you crazy? Like, what are you doing? You had benefits. You were making good money. What is going on? Had this idea for basically this content marketing matching service and started it on April 26th, 2007 was my first blog. I didn't even have a website up. The original idea behind this thing became a blog. And I started a blog about three times a week on content marketing. Like what is content marketing? Why is it important? Why do we even call it? Nobody called it content marketing then, by the way. So I was calling it content marketing and why you should use that term and all this other stuff. And so basically I learned how to create a website. I was using a Typepad blog. I was doing consulting on the side just to pay the bills because we had to eat. I did have some saved up over the years because I knew, you know, this was one thing that I wanted to do. And it was challenging. It took, you know, I mean, fast forward 2.5 years of trying to get the product up and running, trying to build an audience online. And in September 2009, I literally was looking for a job. I thought, okay, we're not going to make it. We were bleeding cash. The product costs a lot of money to try to build this matching service that we were trying to build online. I'm like, this thing is not going to make it. And I started to feel really sorry for myself. I'm like, my wife is like, look, if you want to go back and get a job, but don't put excuses out there. Like, have you given it your all? Have you really looked at the business the right way? So she's been fantastic support for me. And so I really looked at it again. And that's when in September, November, I realized, oh my God, I'm trying to create this product. What if I just built the audience, just really focused on building an exceptional audience and then cater products that they actually are already asking to buy that just happen not to be the thing that I'm selling right now, this matching service. So that's when LaunchContentMarketingInstitute.com formally in May of 2010. And then in January 2011, we launched Chief Content Officer Magazine. In September 2011, launched Content Marketing World, our first big event, where honestly, John, I was hoping for, you know, man, can we get 100 people to come to Cleveland to talk about this thing called content marketing? And we ended up getting 600 to come to Cleveland that year. And when I was on stage in September, September 7th or September 8th, I can't remember the exact date of 2011, I'm on stage and I look out and there's 600 people that came from like 23 countries to go to this event in Cleveland, Ohio, which at that time was even harder to get to than it is right now. And that's the first time I said, oh my God, I might actually not have to go out and get a job. That's the first time. Because I remember really well because, you know, we started the company with my wife. And right before I went out for the opening keynote, because David Meerman Scott was the opening keynote right after me, but I was going on and I was going to, you know, introduce the conference. And my wife comes backstage and she is crying and we hugged and we both started crying. And I'm like, stop, I got to go on stage. But it was one of those moments that you'll never forget because it was the we made it. You know, entrepreneurs that I talk to, they don't always have the we made it moments. That was our we made it moment where all these people actually came and spent money. And so that's the, you know, that's the initial journey. And then we knew we had something and see if it was 6 years, 5 years later. And our goal was always to exit. One of my goals in my book that I was just telling you about was written down that we were, the goal was to sell the company, which I was able to take that out when we got to a certain valuation and sold the company in June of 2016 and kind of went full circle. So it's been a heck of a ride, John, I'll tell you, as you hear all the time, but it's been amazing.
So was your wife still part of the company at that point?
Yes. So it was basically me in April 2007, it was basically me. And then when I had this idea to start what became Content Marketing Institute, she was already scheduling my speaking and sort of planning my calendar and helping me get organized, which is not one of my greatest strengths. So I asked her to sort of stay on. And as we grew CMI, would she start sort of oversee some of the projects and get us organized? And when we really became Content Marketing Institute, she became our vice president of operations and she ran all the operations. And believe it or not, as we speak, I don't want to date this, but tomorrow is her last official day. So she's retiring as part of Content Marketing Institute. She's super excited. We have a nonprofit called Orange Effect Foundation that helps kids find speech therapy that don't have the funds. And so she's going to work on that full time. Wow. So
I love it. I love it. I was going to say, your wife sounds amazing before I even knew this part of it.
She's in the amazing business. I'll tell you.
And then like the fact that like, she sounds like she should be like a executive or business coach, the way at like crucial times when you were just not sure, she was just like, you either got to do this or do this.
You know, it's so funny is she's a social worker. So when I left, I mean, before we have two boys and before we had kids, she was a social worker. She worked at Cuyahoga County in Cleveland. She was exceptional at her job. She was a supervisor. And when I think back on it, maybe being a social worker is one of the best things you could be going into an organization with a lot of personalities. And she had to manage all those because we had about 26 or so full-time people when we sold, and then let's say another 30 to 40 contractors. And she sort of managed all those personalities. So, you know, when I'm looking to hire somebody, I see social work on there and my heart sort of tugs in that direction. Like, I'm like, that person can probably manage a lot of personalities at once. I like it.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I don't want to dwell too much in the past, but because of the successful exit, like that you've had with this. And I do want to talk about sort of where it started, because this idea of creating how you had a product, you tried to find people to buy it, it didn't work, it almost broke you. And then you decided to build an audience and then create things that they want. That's what everybody talks about now. This wasn't now. And so I don't want to gloss over that. But do you remember once you started building CMI out and building that audience, do you remember like the first product that you offered?
Oh, as part of CMI?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so first of all, I wrote about this whole methodology in my last book, Content Inc. It came out in 2015. And basically I went through all, and as you've talked to a lot of the entrepreneurs in the book as well, that they basically built their audience first and then they monetized it. And it's just a media model. It's nothing new. It's been around for hundreds of years, but so many entrepreneurs go out and they have this great idea for this most amazing product, which I think it's such a risky strategy and you don't have to risk that much. What if you just create an audience that knows, likes, and trusts you? And then once you get to know that audience really well, you can start to sell them stuff. That's why I'm good friends with Brian Clark, and Brian Clark's done that. I mean, I don't think he's ever launched a product that didn't work because he knows that audience so well. And so that's the methodology. And when I came around to that in 2009, it basically was a big duh. Like, why was I even trying to create a product? This is so much easier. Just go and build an audience. So start build that audience, got to about 20 to 30,000 opt-in email newsletter subscribers, because everything is driven by email subscribers. And then the first thing we launched was what we called the benefactor package. And the reason why, and I'll go through some detail because I teach it a lot and it's really important, but the benefactor package is basically a combination of content and sponsorship and advertising that they ended up supporting what became Content Marketing Institute. I had no money at the time. So this is in late 2009, early 2010, and I'm trying to relaunch this new thing called Content Marketing Institute. And I had no money left. I'm like, well, what am I going to do? Well, I had some good contacts and I said, well, I created this limited to five, now it's 10, but limited to five benefactors. And you could basically sponsor the Content Marketing Institute and fund us. And for that, you would get 20% of the online inventory, you'd get 20% of the promotions in the email, and you'd get the opportunity to blog on our site. And I went ahead and I called a lot of people that I thought would be interested that wanted to reach marketers around this thing called content marketing. And I said, hey, do you want to do it? It's $15,000 and this is what you get. And it's for a year and done, would you do it? And I had five people sign up pretty quickly. So I'm like, thank God I have enough money that I can eat. I mean, that just funded us being able to survive for the next few months until we created another product, which then we started to do webinars and then obviously started to sell advertising in the magazine and started to get sponsorships in for Content Marketing World. And then everything started to work. But it was the benefactor package. And I detail this in the book. And I said, well, this, you know, you can't, it's very hard to sell direct advertising, but if you can package it as a sponsorship and do it in a certain way, people will want to support you. They believe in what you're doing, or they want to have some kind of lead generation component. So it was that benefactor package that saved us, and that was the first product we launched.
Wow. Not at all what I was expecting from you. That's really impressive because you mentioned Brian Clark in there and this idea, like you did too, of building the audience first and building these products. But, and it sounds easy, but it's still not always, even when you have that audience, sometimes it's not always easy to find the right thing for them.
Oh no, absolutely. It's not, and I make it sound like, oh yeah, all you gotta do is this and create a lot of content and before you know it, you got 10,000 email subscribers. No, but it's easier than creating a product and having no audience for it and nobody to buy that, and then spending a lot of advertising and disrupting a lot of people to try to get people to say, hey, you gotta buy this amazing product. But if you're giving value all the time, you will start to build an audience behind that, and then you just literally ask people what they wanted. I mean, the only reason Content Marketing Institute exists is because I'm trying to sell this matching service. We're basically trying to drive people that want to do custom or like brands that want to create their own content products and can't do it themselves. And I was going to match them up with agencies that offered those services. And like nobody, maybe 1%, maybe a half a percent ever wanted to outsource their content at any one time. So most of my audience wasn't interested. Well, as I was going through all these emails and all the social media, and what were they asking for? They were asking for training and consultation. It's like, Joe, this content marketing thing is new in our organization. We need to be trained. Teach me about it. So that's when we're like, oh my God, maybe there should be an event around this. Or maybe we should do some webinars around this concept. Maybe we should create more online content. Maybe we should create some ebooks. So we just answered the problems, and they were telling us all this time, and I was ignoring it because I fell in love with this other product. And then finally I got that out of the way and said, oh my God, this is what they're asking for. They're actually going to buy it. And so now we have paid training, obviously in in-person event form, as well as online training and a whole bunch of things that just revolve around training.
Yes. They're just telling you, you just have to actually take the time to listen.
Well, I wasn't interested in it because I didn't want to do consulting. And I'm like, well, shoot, there's another person that needs training. Well, go buy my book. So I'd say, okay, here's my book, done. Take that. Here's the audio book of it, whatever. And I didn't even think about, oh my God, everybody that's coming to me has the same problem. And I was ignoring it for about a year. And that's why I gave back to this big, I don't know if it's an aha moment or aha, you're an idiot, Joe, because you haven't been listening to your audience. And a lot of people don't do it. A lot of people, you know, we don't, because we're so focused, and this is, I mean, we work with a lot of very large enterprises. You're so focused on what you want to sell, and the content you create is supposed to drive that sales, the commerce transaction, if you will. And sometimes we forget that, oh, if we just solve that audience's needs on a regular basis, that'll open up markets that we never dreamed of. And sometimes we get in our own way with the products we want to sell.
Exactly. And how long did you stick with the benefactor packages?
Still have it. Wow. Oh, yeah. Still have it. Yeah, it's going 7 years strong and still a great package that we offer, along with about 20 other things that we offer today as well. But our best thing is Content Marketing World. And that's because we went from 600 attendees and a handful of sponsors in 2011. And this year we'll have 4,000 attendees from 70 some countries and 150 sponsors. And it's the best thing we do. It's probably the thing we're most well known for as well.
And hence why you were acquired by UBM, that is a massive events company, right?
That's right. Let's be honest. They pretty much bought it for Content Marketing World. I mean, we have a lot of other events. We have Intelligent Content Conference, which is a smaller event in Las Vegas. We do master classes, small training classes around the country. But yes, absolutely. We have probably the largest, most well-known event in the content marketing industry, and that's what they were interested in.
Fair enough. Whatever it takes.
Whatever. And I love the event. I love the event business because most people do events horribly wrong. I mean, I'm one of those people that I'll go to an event, and I speak about 50 times a year, so I get to go to a lot of different events, and I totally look at it and I'm like, oh, they're doing that wrong. Terrible signage. Why they have that food? Snack tables in the wrong place. Like they didn't teach the speakers to do this. Why aren't they using a consistent template? I mean, I'm all over it. It's because most people don't think about all those little things. No, most people don't think about the experience of an event goer, because I don't know why. I think there's such a huge opportunity there, because 95% of the events out there are horrible. So if you just have to be a little bit better than average to be great.
Well said. And this segues nicely into projects. And so typically we would talk about projects within Content Marketing Institute at this point, but let's not do that because you are sort of winding down your time there. You told us at the beginning that you have this lofty financial goal that you haven't quite achieved yet. So my guess is you're not going to retire at the end of the year, but you've noticed and pointed out a pain point in events. I'm sure you have a ton of ideas of things that you want to make your next project or things you might execute on, whether that's a book or a new company. But I would love to know, in your position right now, Joe, with all the ideas kind of swimming through your head and through your notebooks, how is it you're going about determining, whether that's a written process you have or a gut process, but how are you deciding what your next project is that you should spend your time, energy, and resources on?
So I have an answer to this. You might not like it, but I'm going to tell you the truth because it is what it is. So the one, when I started the business in 2007, I remember when I went in and gave my notice when I was working at Pent Media, and I said, one of my main goals is to spend more time with my family, especially my two boys at the time. And they were 3 and 5, as I said. Now they're 14 and 15. And then you start a business. And of course, anybody that started a business, you realize that you have less time than you ever had working a real job. And I traveled a lot, like way more than I ever did working at Penton. And I've been 1K United member for a long, long time, traveling all over the world, talking about and evangelizing, I would call it, content marketing. And I don't think I've lived up to that of spending time with the kids. So Now I have no excuses anymore to do that. So basically what I'm doing is I'm finishing out the year. I'm brand director right now. I'm still founder of Content Marketing Institute. I'm still going to stick around and do things with CMI, but my role is definitely going to change. And in January, I'm actually taking 30 days off of, I guess you could call it a sabbatical. No email, no social media, no nothing, no screen time. I'm totally going off the grid. And I'm going to be present. So my goal is to be present for at least the month of January. And while my kids actually want to spend time with me, that's what I'm going to do, because they'll be off in university in a few years and they can do whatever they want. Hopefully they'll still want to spend time with their dad. But right now they want to be around me. So I'm going to spend some time doing that. But regarding the, so, and I'm the kind of, you probably know this, but I have a business idea every day. And all I'm doing right now is I have the notebook by me. I have an orange notebook right by me that I write all these ideas. And they're things about launching events and starting businesses and new content ideas and all those things. And all I'm doing right now, John, is I'm just writing them down. And I'm not going to take action on any of those for the next 6 months. I'm just writing, because by the way, I just finished my fifth book called Killing Marketing. Comes out in September. It'll launch at Content Marketing World. So I'll go do that. I'm going to do some speaking in the fall on killing marketing and talk about that whole thing, then take January off. And then February 1, I'll actually sit down and start taking a look at what's next for Joe. So, I mean, that's probably not what you were looking for.
It is exactly what I was looking for.
Oh, well, good. Well, that, because I honestly know what's going to be next. And it's really hard for me, because I think the biggest struggle in this whole process for me is, what am I going to do? Like, what is the next chapter? And I've been really working with my wife on, she's been coaching me again, saying, you don't have to know. You don't have to know, like, career-wise or business-wise. And by the way, it doesn't have to be anything. It could be meeting with friends, working in the nonprofit, spending time with your kids, affecting change in a positive way. And it doesn't necessarily, maybe I go back and I look at my financial goals and maybe I'm fine. Maybe I change that goal. Maybe I focus completely on other change, like the Orange Effect Foundation that my wife is going to work on full time. That's a huge effort, hugely, really important for me personally and for our family. My oldest son is on the autism spectrum and we've been working hard in that industry for a long time. So I could just be happy doing that. So anyways, February 1st, you can have me back on if you want.
Yeah.
And I can tell you about that journey and being offline.
Maybe the second, so we know what you're doing then.
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to take notes and every day about, because I haven't been offline for, you know, I don't know, 20 years.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it's going to be like. I know people that have gone through it, but I'm definitely going to give it a shot and see what happens.
Fascinating. I love it. I love it. So this has been an absolute blast, Joe. It's just been a great conversation. I do want to wrap up with one final question. That was just, you're looking forward. Now I would like it if we could look back.
Sure.
So I'm working with this idea. It's taken from Dan Sullivan, The Entrepreneurial Gap. And I've used it throughout these 300 and something conversations. This gap that sometimes we live in as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, that no matter what we accomplish personally, we oftentimes live in this gap where we don't personally see ourselves as successful. No matter what we accomplish, it's when we stand on that next stage in 3 months, when that next book hits the bestseller list in 6 months, when we hit that revenue goal in 9 months, whatever it happens to be. You and I both know we set bigger, loftier goals into the future the second that happens. And like walking towards the horizon, the further you walk, the further away it gets. You've accomplished a ton. We don't know if it's exactly what you're going to strive for ultimately. That doesn't matter at this point. I would love it right now if you could stop, turn around, and look behind you. The highs, lows, wins, and the losses. But tell me how you feel about the whole journey until today.
Wow. Is that really a question? That's fit. That's like, I feel this extra burden on my shoulders. I'm such a homer for entrepreneurial people. I've since I became an entrepreneur and be able to do whatever I want during the day and go wherever I want and make my own decisions and not be beholden to somebody else, I feel bad for a lot of people that have a regular job. Now, I don't want that to sound condescending because it's not. I mean, I have teachers in my family that are amazing, musicians in my family that just are amazing. And they, you know, and there's wonderful people that do wonderful things. But for me personally, I changed in 2007 when I launched the business because I felt like I was in shackles and like, oh my God. And I realized that there's a different way to live your life. And I was missing it this whole time. And I think, and actually I started, it was 2007. So I was 34 at the time, and which I guess depending on how you look at it is young or old, but I look back on it and I'm like, wow, I wish I would have started sooner. But that said, you know, I started when I started and now I'm, you know, 44 and not retiring, but kind of going off to the next journey. I would say the biggest question that I get, I do a lot of entrepreneurial consulting, or I'll meet with entrepreneurs and small business owners and just talk, we'll have coffee and just try to be a mentor or help them if I can. And when they talk about all the reasons why they can't start a business or why they can't do something. And I tell them, like, they expect me to say, Joe, no, that's, or they expect me to say, no, that Jim or Bob or Susie, that's not right. You need to think about it this way. I always tell them, you're absolutely right. You can't do that because of this. You can't do that because of that. And they're like, wait, hey, you're supposed to like uplift me. Like, why aren't you giving me good, solid advice? And I'm saying, if you believe that you can't do something because of your kids or because you don't have money or whatever the reason is, then you can't, because that's what you believe, that you're creating that world. I said the same thing can be true. If you believe you can, because or from what you can do and what you have, then you can. And that's why I'm all in this thing with my boys right now about an optimistic behavior and actually thinking that you can do something and not coming up with excuses. I am not like one, and like you just mentioned this about like talent and drive. If I look at my talent, I don't feel I'm any more talented. And in some ways, I'm less talented than a lot of the people that I know. The only thing that's maybe different about me is I am an optimist, and I really do believe I can do anything just because the fact that the majority of the people out there don't get started. That's it. That's the only difference is I go. Like when the gun goes off at the start line, I'm running slow, I'm falling down, but I'm actually running when most of the people there are still at the line trying to think about, well, should I do it? Should I not? Oh, there's a secure job over here. I'm going to get that. I don't feel like I can risk it. Take a chance over here. That's the difference. So I guess the most important decision I ever made was when we sat down in early 2007 with my wife, and she, thank goodness, said, Joe, let's just set a date and let's hit that date and we'll see what happens. And we set that date, and from that moment on, it's just been the most amazing ride. And maybe also for the fact that I know a lot of people have trouble doing this, I was able to work every day with my wife, my best friend. A lot of people don't have that, can't do that. I've been told a lot of people can't do that who are married, work with their significant others. But we had just a great time of it. So that's what I would say is now is the absolute best time. Tomorrow is not going to be any better. There's always going to be something else. And the only difference between what I did and everyone else out there is that I jumped.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said. We've got to talk about the business in passing, Joe. You mentioned in passing a brand new book coming out in September. Where can we specifically send the listener so that they make sure they find out when that book comes out?
Oh, thank you for that. Yeah. I don't even know if the website's up yet, but it's going to be killingmarketing.com. You can go to, and then Amazon.com is already selling it for pre-order. So you can go to Amazon.com and check it out. And then we'll be debuting it. And I'll be speaking about it. My co-author, Robert Rose, will be speaking about it at Content Marketing World, which is September 5th through 8th in Cleveland, Ohio, and which is also my hometown and also the headquarters for Content Marketing Institute.
Very cool. Very cool. So pre-order, I'll find that link for you and I'll put it in the show notes on Hack the Entrepreneur. As well, I'll check if killingmarketing.com is available, and some other books we talked about, The 10X Rule by Grant Cardone, Think and Grow Rich, and I'll also link to the now infamous Content Marketing Institute Joe.com. And Joe is on Twitter, not next January, but he will be until then and possibly after. So I'll put that there too if you want to follow up with him at all. It'll all be there for you in the show notes when you're done working, jogging, driving, whatever it is you're doing right now. Joe, once again, thank you so much for taking the time to share with me so openly and to just chat. It's been amazing. And please keep doing what you're doing because it is awesome to watch.
And anytime. And then let's chat after February 1st. We'll see what happens.
Thank you.
You got it. Thank you.
What if you could discover what people are saying about you and your brand in real time? Brand 24 gives you instant access to mentions about your brand across the web, from social networks to influential publishers. Start discovering what people are saying about you with Brand 24. Go to brand24.com/hack. That's brand24.com/hack for a 14-day free trial. And as a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you're going to get an exclusive 50% off your first 3 months. Once again, that's brand24.com/hack. Yes, yes. I said it at the beginning of the interview, and I absolutely meant it. Joe, I should have had you on the show years ago, but it's really, really, really cool that we connected and that you stopped by. I learned a lot about you. I learned a lot about your business, and I hope that we got to share that with you out there listening as well. So getting to take part in this conversation, having watched Joe for years, read his books, consumed his content, and just watched him grow Content Marketing Institute until getting to exit it last year in a very successful way, it was really cool to get to take part in that conversation. But now we've reached the point in the conversation where I get to go back and I get to listen to the conversation like you did. So that's what I did. I went back and I listened to the conversation Joe and I had, and I went through. And then I went back through the conversation again. That second time back through the conversation, there was some things that Joe had said, but there was this one thing that stood out to me above everything else. It was the one thing that Joe said. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I'll read mine to you, which I actually have not reached yet, but my first financial goal, I have it right in front of me, is my net worth is over $100 million. I have not reached that goal, but I read that every day. And then I'm like, okay, well, what do I need to do? What do I need to do to get there? I got lots to do. The second goal is I own companies that I can control from a distance and have great people working with me. So, I mean, then by the way, I have 3 to 4 for each one. I have, you know, financial and then spiritual and family and those types of things. So, and I think it's the present tense nature of it. Like it's happened, like it is happening now instead of being a wish. It's something that, oh, yes, absolutely. Get my mind right. What do I need to do?
And that's the hack. Joe, Joe, Joe. I absolutely love this. I love that you have these 6 categories. Then you have 3 to 4 goals within each. You write them down and they're in front of you every single day. And then there's this tweak. So lots of us have goals. Lots of us set goals and ambitions ahead of us that we want to reach. Lots of us write them down. Lots of us maybe put them in front of us. I love this twist on it of putting it into the present tense. And I love the ambition behind my net worth is $100 million. I have to say that I absolutely love that. But I love this twist on making it in the present tense, that it's already happened, and then it's your job, it's Joe's or your job out there, to set these goals in the present tense and then look at them every day and say, perfect, what do I need to do to get there? Getting somewhere sort of amorphous, somewhere that doesn't exist even in your head of where you want to be, it's kind of impossible to get there, isn't it? But if you have that clear sort of statement, it's so much simpler. It's not easy, but it's so much simpler to backstep from that future point you want to be, break it down, and then as Joe says, look at it and say to yourself, cool, what do I need to do to get there? So Joe has, he had his financial, his family, his spiritual, I guess a business goal.
You can break these down in any way you want, but write them down and try this. Try what Joe says and write them down in the present tense and constantly ask yourself, what do I need to do to get there? Joe, thank you so very much. All right. Well, that was a lot of fun. I'm honored and privileged and so happy that Joe joined us. And I hope you dug that as much as I did. Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the site. Remember, I wrote a book a year and a half ago. It's actually over 10,000 copies now. So I got to update that. But if you go to hacktheentrepreneur.com, right at the very top, you're going to see a spot. If you put your email address in there, you can get the book absolutely for free. PDF copy of it. If you've bought the book, if you're one of those 10,000 people, then I thank you, truly. It means a lot. It really does. It means a lot to me too, though, if you haven't bought the book and you want to go download it and read it. If you dig it, if you don't dig it, I don't know, like hit me with an email. Let me know. I would appreciate that anyways. I'd just like to get into your hands. I believe that that book is something that can sort of maybe give you that kick in the ass that you might need to get through and do the stuff you want to do. Build the businesses you want to build. All right. It's been fun. I will not take any more of your time. I do appreciate you stopping by, though. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.